Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Now that we're finally all here, not that I'm naming any names, George, let's raise a glass to good friends, good times and good memories. Wish we had better weather. But at least we got a solid roof over our heads, a decent fire, and a good brew. I don't want to be out in the bush tonight, not with what might be roaming around in that storm. Oh, don't give me that look, Jerry. We've all seen things. If John or J&Q Public knew half of what we do, they'd crap their collective pants. Don't shake your heads at me. You know I'm right. For instance, they've closed the park. Well, you know where. What's the excuse? Military maneuvers? Don't make me laugh. Come on, Jackie. You're in the forces. Do you guys ever go on maneuvers in the national parks? Damn right. Search and rescue, sure. And trust me, we're damn glad to have you guys when you show up. You've saved many a life. But maneuvers when there's hundreds of thousands of miles of government land available? Yeah, right. Tell me another. What do I think? Well, I have an idea. I hope to God I'm wrong, but if I'm not, I hope to Christ they close it off in time. You want to know? Well, I can tell you, because I know you all have stories of your own. Plus, it's not as if you'll run off and tell. Not like anyone will believe you even if you did. But I swear, before Almighty God, it's the absolute truth. I wish it weren't. We like to believe that the world, with its bright lights and science, is sane and safe and knowable, but it's not. Far from it. I know you guys who work in the city have seen some things too. Somehow though, when you work in the bush, you're more aware that there's more we don't know, don't want to know, than we let on. Some people who come into the park don't notice. They pitch their tents, pull up in their camper, look at the mountains, take pictures, hike a trail, talk about how nice it is, and go home, happy as clams. Others, though, they sense it, feel the power here. Most of the time, it's not a bad thing, but like any force, if you don't treat it properly, it'll give you one hell of a shock. Some of them leave pretty messed up, because they didn't have the right attitude. While others leave reinvigorated, reborn, because they hit the right place or had the right mindset. And some of them, hell, some never leave at all. Okay, I'm getting there. It's not easy reliving this. It happened to someone I knew, Charlie. Just give me a minute, okay? All right. This is what happened. I had just finished my Introduction to Wildlife lecture to some of the campers and was getting ready to go home. Some of the guys hack on them, but I don't. Yeah, I know, they show up in gas-guzzling SUVs and Winnebagos, but they stick to the planned campsites and don't cause trouble. And some come to the lectures and learn what the park system is about. And you know what? At least they're trying to make that connection. And I've seen some of them come back. And sometimes they've switched from SUVs to hybrids. So maybe they've learned something. You never know. The worst ones in my books are those who've watched Survivor Man. Figure they're the experts. Head out into the most inaccessible parts of the park, get lost, and then we have to rescue their silly asses. Or the idiots who climb a few rock walls in town and then end up hanging halfway off a mountain in the middle of winter. Anyhow, as I was saying, I'd just finished my lecture and was answering a few questions. About bears, I think. People are fascinated by bears. I always say the best way to observe a bear is from far away. You never know what one of those buggers will do, and you should never stick around to find out. Anyway, there was a tap on my shoulder and I turned around. It was Fred Richmond. a biologist with the ministry, and I hadn't seen him in forever. We shook hands, and I asked him what in the hell he was doing on my turf. He grinned through his bushy beard and said he was going up the old logging road to one of the stations the ministry had set up to monitor air quality. Incidentally, he added, he also had some motion capture cameras there to record the amount of animal activity in the area, more specifically, bear. Since I'd been speaking of bears, how would I like to come and check it out? It's a delicate balance when it comes to people and wildlife here. Keeping people away from predators like bears and big cats is always tough. Tracking these animals' movements is one way to figure out how to keep humans from harm and vice versa. I said sure. Fred was always good company. It was early afternoon, a bright hot day, and I couldn't think of a better way to spend my time. Of course, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. If I had, I would have said no goddamn way and dragged Fred out of the park. Hell, I would have kidnapped him. I wish to Christ I had. Unaware of what was waiting for us, I said yes instead. My shift was over, my time was my own, and I couldn't think of a better way to spend the rest of the day. If only I had known. I didn't. Instead, I headed over to his little 4x4, only to be stopped by my boss, Jack, who wanted to know where the hell I thought I was going. I pointed out I was off shift, and Fred invited me up to the ministry station. To my surprise, he didn't moan. You remember Jack? He used to moan about everything. Instead, he said, great, there's been some strange reports from that area, so you can check it out. Strange activity, I asked. What are you talking about? And, more importantly, does this mean I'm still on the clock? As in overtime? Sure, Jack said. When I'm king of the world. Just check it out, will you? I noticed he avoided answering my first question, but I decided not to push it. With Jack, he never quite knew what would set him off, and I figured, hell, it can't be too bad. He hadn't given me a dart gun or any kind of warning. And although Jack could be a sour old so-and-so, he would never knowingly send anyone into a dangerous situation. I figured it's probably okay, and having Jack owe me a favour might come in handy. Here, he said, handing me a walkie-talkie. Keep in touch. You know, by giving me that radio, that sour son of a gun probably saved my life. But then, I just looked at him. Seriously? He shrugged. Probably nothing, he said, but there have been some strange stories, if you can believe the tourists. Animals leaving the area, strange lights, that sort of thing. Tourists? Fred laughed in his beard. They telling you they're seeing little green men, Jack? He laughed again. Fred didn't have a high opinion of tourists, but if you had to save one from a 1,000-pound grizzly, you might not either. Idiot was from Japan and thought all bears were teddy bears, and was trying to hand-feed the damn thing. Fred saved him from losing his hand. Hell, his whole damn arm, to the Kodiak, who hadn't been told that it was bad manners to eat the visitors. But it left Fred with a low opinion of their intelligence. The tourists, not the bears. I told Fred to mind his manners, climbed into his Jeep, and we started off. Driving through the campground, Fred amused himself by offering colour commentary on the visitors. We passed by one Winnebago the size of a small hotel, and Fred wondered why they bothered coming to the park. I shrugged and pointed out that those sweet tourist dollars paid our salaries, so he shouldn't complain too loudly, at least not loud enough to be heard. We spent the next few minutes in a good-natured argument, ultimately agreeing to disagree when we reached the turnoff to the ancient logging road which wound its way up the mountainside. I got out and unlocked the gate blocking the entrance. Generally, it was forbidden to vehicular traffic, although park staff did sometimes use it. Also, some visitors to the park used it as a hiking trail. Fred drove through and waited while I closed and locked the gate behind us. Then I got back in, and off we went, jouncing along the rutted, winding road. We kept conversation to a minimum as we roared along. The road was full of potholes, and the shocks from the Jeep were not enough to shield us from the eye-watering, teeth-rattling bounces. At one point, I remember Fred muttering that the park had charged admission and run the road as a thrill ride. He wasn't wrong. Between the potholes, the sharp curves, and the steep hills, it was like riding a roller coaster, albeit one that seemed to be shedding nuts and bolts at an alarming rate. Gravel flew up around the tires, and dust hung heavy in the air. It hadn't rained for a week, so the air was hot and dry, and the woods crowding us were sharp and parched. The fire risk was medium, but if it didn't rain soon, it would quickly spike to high. We rounded a curve and nearly ran over three hikers. They were pretty, blonde German girls in their mid-20s. For once, Fred was not complaining about tourists running amok in the park. Instead, he was all gallantry and offered them a lift. It was a hot day and we were headed in the same direction, and the park service was there to help. We had to shift some of Fred's scientific gear onto the floor to make room, but it was okay. We continued along, and the presence of Angela, Helga, and Inga made things much more pleasant. Fred stopped driving like a damn maniac, so that the Jeep was no longer hitting every pothole and washout in creation, and we were chatting about the park. It was lucky that Fred had slowed down, because I shudder to think what would have happened if we'd been roaring along at his usual speed. We came around one of those blind corners and nearly ran headlong into a felled pine that completely blocked the road. Fred hit the brakes and the Jeep went into a heart-stopping spin, eventually coming to a stop about 6 inches parallel to it. We sat in stunned silence until our hearts stopped trying to climb out of our chests. Then Fred cursed and very slowly put the Jeep in reverse, did a 180 until it was facing the tree. We got out to examine it. It was a large, mature pine with a waist-high trunk. The lack of dust in the air told us it hadn't fallen recently. Otherwise, there was no way to tell how long it had been lying there. Hours, days, or weeks. I saw it was healthy. Sometimes an old, dead tree will be knocked down by a bear or elk as they scratch themselves. But this tree was too big and strong. Nor did a beaver bring it down. The longer I looked, the less I liked it. It looked like deliberate vandalism. Although, why would anyone do so out here was a mystery. Nevertheless, it gave me a bad feeling, seeing it laying so deliberately across the road. I went back to the Jeep, picked up the walkie, called the main station. There was heavy static, and I was having trouble getting through. I nearly gave up, but something told me to keep trying. Feeling a bit of a fool, I climbed onto the Jeep's roof, extended the walkie's antenna. That did the trick. I got through, but the signal was faint. I described the situation, location, and requested a cleanup crew. I also insisted that they make it priority. There was some grumbling at the other end, but I knew things were quiet, and this feeling of wrongness persisted, so I was adamant. I didn't end transmission until I knew they were on their way. Fred was frowning at me. I asked what his problem was. He said he didn't want to waste time waiting. Somewhat sarcastically, I asked him what he wanted to do. Walk? To my surprise, he said yes. Turned out we're only a couple of miles away. I didn't much care for the idea of lugging all of Fred's equipment, and said so. He pointed out that the cleanup guys could drive the Jeep to the shack once they cleared the road. We'd leave them a note and the keys in the car. I was dubious. Wasn't he afraid someone might steal the Jeep? The equipment was valuable. Fred roared with laughter. Who, he asked me, was going to swipe the Jeep? A bear? An elk? I replied that maybe whoever dropped the tree across the road might still be around. Fred clapped me on the shoulder with one of his meaty hands. No one else was around, he told me, and anyone dumb enough to try and swipe a ministry jeep in the park wouldn't get far. I still wasn't totally convinced. Things still felt off, but I didn't want to spend the afternoon arguing with Fred. He could talk your ear right off. Besides, the girls were getting ready to head off, with or without us, and I didn't want them to head off alone. No, Jackie, they could have been three old hags of 85, and I would have felt the same way. I'm telling you, something felt wrong. It was obvious no one else noticed, but I did. We stuck a note on the steering wheel, asking the guys to drive the jeep to the cabin once they clear the road. Fred added the enticement. Cold beer waiting, in big letters. I asked if that was true, and he winked and opened the trunk. Inside sat a cooler with 2-4 inside. He pointed out that the guys didn't need to know they would be bringing the beer, did they? He took out cans for everyone, noting that hiking could be thirsty work, and after he closed and locked the trunk, we started out. We clambered over the tree's trunk without too much difficulty and started up the road, setting a steady, even pace. And now I noticed the silence. While riding in the car, the sound of the engine and the chatter of conversation had been predominant. But as we were walking up the steady incline, all I could hear was my own breathing and the steady shuffle of our footfalls through the gravel. I asked Fred if he noticed. He nodded, his face thoughtful. I suspect we were both thinking the same thing, wondering if a bear or big cat was prowling nearby. It's one thing to observe one of these predators from the relative safety of a car's interior, quite another to meet them face to face. We kept our thoughts to ourselves. No sense alarming the ladies. We walked for about 2 hours in the steadily thickening silence. I was just about to suggest we take a break when the road made a sharp, hairpin turn, and that's when we came upon him. It was a little kid, maybe 4 years old, tops. He was standing in the middle of the road, his thatch of blonde hair gleaming in the sun, with the kind of sweet, cute face that make most women, and some men, melt like sugar in the rain. He was dressed in a pair of denim overalls and had a white shirt and tiny running shoes. And he was covered in blood. He took one look at us, opened his mouth, and began to scream. We stood there, shocked into silence for a second. Then Fred ran towards him. Instead of allowing Fred to sweep him up in his arms, the kid turned and began to run up the slope of the hill, still screaming. We could make out some of his words. He was saying that the others needed help. Please hurry, help, help, help. The others? Of course, it made sense that a little kid wouldn't be out here on his own. His parents must be around somewhere, and hurt badly. It was astonishing how fast the kid could run, considering that, with all that blood, he looked like he had been injured. He disappeared over the crest of the hill, but we could still hear him. We took off in hot pursuit, Fred in the lead. The road dipped sharply down, and at the bottom, a horrific scene met our disbelieving eyes. The kid was running towards a tipped over school bus. We could see the faces of the other little kids pressed up against the glass and hear faint screams. Smoke and flames were rising from the engine block. The whole thing might go up at any minute. The door was jammed shut. The kids were trapped. The blonde kid stopped about 5 feet away from the bus. He turned, crying, begging us for help. Fred continued to run towards him, yelling assurances as he did. And I stopped. How in the hell had the kid gotten out of that bus? The door was jammed shut. So were all the windows. I put an arm out and stopped Angela. She turned on me, snarling. Was I crazy? The little boy needed help. The children needed help. I shook my head. It was the middle of summer. What the hell was a school bus doing out here? Helga and Inga had also stopped. They were torn, wanting to help the children, but also automatically reacting to my authority. It's funny what power a badge, even a park ranger's badge, will give you. Helga suggested that maybe it was a Boy Scout troop. I shook my head. We had no notice of any Boy Scout outings in the park. By now, there was a hard lump in my stomach. Something very bad was happening here, and it wasn't the overturned bus. I was sure of that. Angela was furious. It didn't matter. They were children who needed help. I yelled at Fred to stop. Surprised, he did and turned to me. What the hell was my problem? These kids were in trouble, and he headed towards them again. I shouted again, and that's when it happened. The whole scene wavered like a bad television signal, and the little blonde kid's face disappeared. It became a blank, pale oval under that mop of hair. Even though there was no longer a mouth present, the screams and cries continued, joined now by those of the three women with me. Fred skidded to a stop. I couldn't see his face, but I could hear him. He too was screaming. The area around the bus began to pulse. That's the best way I can describe it. And with each pulse, there was a horrible sound, a great obscene breathing, in and out. A small black hole formed in the middle of the school bus and was drawing everything towards it with every inhalation, and I could feel myself being dragged towards that center with each breath. The scene was becoming scrambled, looking less and less like anything recognizable. Things were swirling around the hole as if it were a drain. One second it looked as if there was still a bus laying there. Next, it was as if there was just colored bits swirling around this invisible vortex. The best way I can describe it is as if there were a jigsaw puzzle that had been disassembled and the bits flung all over the place and were now circling around an open drain. The worst, though, was the kid thing. It still stood in front of the whirling mass in its denim overall and the horrible blank oval where a face should have been, holding its hand out in an obscene parody of begging for help. A high, keening wail came from somewhere in the vicinity of where its mouth should have been. The ground began to shake. Fred lost his balance, fell onto his face, and began to slide. He looked like a fish on a line being dragged towards the center of that pulsing mass. He began to writhe and scream. I too fell face forward. I could feel myself being dragged along, as if there were a line from my middle stretching to the center of that heaving, gasping mass. God only knows what would have happened when suddenly the cavalry arrived in the form of one of the cleanup crews driving Fred's Jeep, followed by a park service truck. I hadn't heard them driving up because the sounds by that thing, along with a still screaming kid creature and Fred's shrieks, were deafening. But I was unexpectedly grabbed by the ankles by two pairs of hands and dragged backwards to the safety of Fred's Jeep. They had already pulled the women into safety of that pickup truck that had been used to clean up the tree. They pulled me into the Jeep and were about to go after Fred. But it was too late. As we stared in horrified silence, Fred was pulled into the hole and disappeared. There was a final, slobbering inhalation, a high-pitched shriek, and the whole scene closed in on itself, shrank to a pinpoint, and then disappeared. The ground shook violently, and then stillness and silence. Fred was utterly gone. They never found any trace of him, or that a bus or any kids had ever been there for that matter. They closed off that area for 6 weeks. There was a special team from the military, NASA, every alphabet soup organization you can think of. Hell, I half expected Mulder and Scully to show up at one point. They went over that place with a fine-tooth comb. I have a feeling that they knew what they were looking for, and that this was not the first time this had happened. They interrogated us for weeks. I don't know what they expected me to tell them, but I would tell you this much. No one disbelieved me. I expected them to make me sign some sort of secrecy oath, but they didn't. I even asked one military guy, after the end of a long day of questioning, why not? He just looked at me and cracked a smile. The most cynical smile I think I've ever seen on another human being. And shook his head. Tell anyone you want, he said. Who's going to believe you? And then he picked up his briefcase and left. I'll tell you something else too. A new monitoring station went up in the exact spot where we saw whatever the hell it was. They say it's a weather station, and it does have one of those geodesic domes that house radar equipment. I have no doubt that if you were to go inside, that's what you would find. And I'm willing to bet you'll find all kinds of other gear too. Equipment made for tracking other things. Things maybe for stuff that is out of this world. I know this much. When you start getting reports of strange animal behavior and odd lights, and then they close off part of the park, do yourself a favor. Don't go exploring. Not unless you want to run into that kid that's not a kid. Or end up wherever Fred did.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.